This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Simon Niesler from Infor.
Good morning. Simon Niesler from Infor. Recently joined Infor now, I think coming up for 6 months. My title is Senior Vice President and General Manager for Western Europe. Western Europe encompasses the UK, Ireland, the Benelux countries, and Israel, bizarrely. The general manager part means that I now have overall responsibility across Infor, whereas in the past it was siloed. Now we've brought it all under a single leader.
You come in at a time when Infor's on a huge push forward. Record revenue, record turnover, massive amounts of investment. What does that give you to play with when you're trying to build the region?
What it really gives me is a higher sense of expectation. I think it's important that we set ourselves a high bar and we drive towards that. But I also think people by nature want to surround themselves by successful things and successful organisations and successful people. So it's easier for me to be able to give a message to the market about the momentum we're going and the direction we're heading in because of the success that we're experiencing. What it does give me is a huge amount of momentum and the ability to be able to raise the expectation levels internally as well as with my customers.
Europe's a very complicated area to have because it's so many countries with so many cultural differences. How challenging does that become when you're trying to pick a line in which to promote specific products or choose the vertical markets which are best suited?
Just for a point of clarity, I obviously don't run all of Europe, I just run Western Europe. And I'm fortunate in that the western part of the continent that I have is majority Dutch, and there's quite a strong cultural alignment between there and Australians, which I am. It's refreshing to hear their directness. And that's obviously opposed to the English. Now, I've got a theory, and I may be wrong and call me naive, but I've got a theory that says that people buy or organisations buy for two main reasons. They'll either buy or partner or transact with organisations like us for a financial reason, they'll either save the money or make the money, or it'll be because of regulation and compliance. And I don't think that the cultural side of things or the cultural mix comes into that too much. What we need to do is we need to align ourselves as an organization and show these prospects and customers and partners about how we're best placed to be able to make the money, solve the money, or allow them to meet their regulatory obligations. That's where it comes in. The cultural side of things or the geographical differences comes in not so much for me, but for some of my other peers, where we're talking about languages and localization and different tax rules, etc. I'm fortunate in the UK, it's a traditional landing zone, if you like, for want of a better term, for high-tech companies coming into Europe because of the simplicity of the tax rules, believe it or not, and the languages are more closely aligned. Well, it's as close as you can get to America. I don't feel there's a huge challenge around the cultural things for me, but for some of my peers, it's challenging for them, yes.
There's quite a lot of companies now starting to operate in the ERP space. If we go back 5-6 years, we only had maybe 3-4 companies. You look around now, there's a lot of people. More importantly, they're all targeting the same partners. And we've started to see partners not just picking up one or two ERP vendors, but trying to support a swathe. We've also seen some partners being pulled away from where they traditionally were. How is that playing out for you as you look forward to building your partner base?
If we follow the ERP market back in the late 90s, early millennium, there was a lot more than 5 or 6. We recall we were into double figures. And then if you think about the legacy mega vendors that are still around today, the 3 big legacy conglomerates, they sort of snapped everybody up. They had a run at the market, and then as requirements change, as technology changes, there was the ability there for niche vendors to come in and be more agile. They're the organizations that you're talking about. How that affects back to the partners and the partner community, I'm seeing partners who had maybe 2 partnerships or 2 alliances with maybe 2 of those legacy mega vendors, dropping one of those and retaining one which is probably their largest bookable revenue line. But what I'm seeing is they're coming to us a lot now as a viable alternative to that mega vendor. And it's the same logic to them as it is to the customers. I was quoted recently in saying that I've seen more what I would describe as net new digital transformation or engagements happening now than I have in a long time. More at Infor from a broad spectrum of volume of them, not necessarily the values. And I've been scratching my head as to why that is. Obviously, we're being pulled by the market, but a big part of it is also that we are being invited in because of we are now seen as a credible and a reliable alternative to those mega vendors. So it's the same story, whether or not it be for the partners, as what it is for the customers.
One of the issues for many of those partners with the mega vendors was that they had a lot of consulting work. There was massive amounts of configuration and customization and code to be written, as well as business processes. As a cloud-based company, that's a very different game, because now it is configuration, not customization. It's about how do you move quickly, not how do you get tied up in so much code. How does that change relationship with partners? Because it's no longer about picking up a small number of clients through you that make them a lot of money. Now they need to look at a wider picture and, in fact, spread their load from big companies to much smaller organizations.
If I roll it back a little bit, there are an awful lot of partners who have very successful businesses off the back of those change requests and those things that you were talking about there for the old legacy on-premise environments. The way that the industry's moving and the way that the trends are happening at the moment, that revenue stream is becoming increasingly under threat. So I believe that they are going to be forced to change their business model irrespective. But how does it change for them? I think they're going to need to align themselves with vendors who are agile and who are able to be disruptive and who are acquisitive towards net new name logos. Off the back of that, we have a very strong net new name acquisition strategy at Infor. The resourcing that I am doing now, and actually it reminds me of a question you asked a few moments ago about, with all the change and the momentum, does it give me more resources? It absolutely does. I'm doubling down on net new name and client acquisition. So because of that, I think that makes us very attractive for the partners out there who are intuitive enough and smart enough to realize that they need to change their business model, the same as their customers need to change their business model as well. It goes all the way through the supply chain, so everybody's having to change. Not only the mega vendors moving from on-premise to cloud, which they're sort of struggling with, the more agile companies like us, which are ahead and we'll see how long we're ahead for, and then our partners who are able to have to change their business models. But I would think it'd make no sense for them to move to another mega vendor. They'd have to go to one of the more agile companies.
If we look at the mega vendors historically, they've been a very broad church. You've taken an interesting position now at Infor. You have a core set of technology, but you've become very vertically focused. Does that change your go-to-market with your partners? Do you start looking for partners who've got specialization in all of the small markets, or are you still working with partners who've got a wider remit, i.e. they understand multiple markets, and they therefore spread their Infor load across those teams?
A lot of the work that I've been doing and the teams have been doing over the last 6 months is linking back our vertical markets where we know we have that last mile functionality and we're very strong, and linking that back to dedicated partners. Not exclusive partners, but preferred partners is maybe is a better way to describe it, where we'll go and stand shoulder to shoulder, hip to hip, whatever cliche you want to use, and we will say this is our go-to-market within this particular sub-vertical. How we choose those partners is referenceability. We jointly need to be able to say we have worked with partner X in this sub-vertical and we have solved a business challenge in that sub-vertical, and then we are now linking that back to our other prospects. So we do that on a vertical axis, if you think about the customers, and that reference needs to be a business reference. It needs to be single-use plastic in CPG. It needs to be diesel costs or transportation costs in distribution companies, and so it's a business problem that they're having. That's how we go after the industries. We still have leading line of business products. As you well know, we have EAM, and which is our asset management solution. We have a leading expense management solution today. These few days are all about workforce and the human potential. We also have a very strong HCM solution that's interconnected in with AI. Those are more of a horizontal solution, and we will be targeting those across the industries as a horizontal. We're having dedicated partners for those.
When you look at these new partners coming in, one of the interesting issues is once they are a specialist in a small area, how do you get them to the point where they understand your breadth of technology stack? Because it's not just about getting one area of that business covered with ERP. You clearly want to then expand and cover the whole of the target customer. But that may not be so simple for some of these smaller partners. So how do you build that relationship? What do you offer them in order to be able to upskill them?
I would challenge you on the ERP part of that question, in that moving forward, we won't be going to market with ERP. We'll be going to market, I know solution is an over-abused word in our industry, but I'll bring you back to where I was talking about the solution to business problems. And the products that sit underneath those solutions may well be a combination of ERP, EAM, some reporting through the burst functionality or whatever, whatever, whatever. That puts another level of complexity, which I presume is your question, on the partners, in that they need to be more aligned towards solving business problems and they need to be working on an integrated solution stack. Thankfully, we've done a lot of that work for them because our unique cloud suite, we've done all those pre-integrations. And for those of people listening who don't know, if you have a look on the website, you'll see, have a read up about the difference between what we have as a cloud suite. We have a cloud suite for automotive, we have a cloud suite for food and beverage, we have a cloud suite for retail and fashion, for argument's sake, and the list goes on, where those integrations are all pre-built and then they're sat out on the cloud, and so those customizations are minimal for the partner.
Once they've solved one problem for a client, how do you then expand into other parts of that target customer?
Once again, it comes back to understanding that industry and the challenges of that industry, which is why I believe the approach that we're having of a industry go-to-market not only aligns to that last mile functionality that you were referring to, but it also puts the customer at the center of our go-to-market. As a reseller, if you know your industry and you know food and beverage, for argument's sake, you should know the macro challenges that organization is facing and then be able to link that back to our solution set. And then I would argue that's the route forward on it.
How do you then tier those resellers and those partners? Because some will have very good country-specific expertise. Some will have maybe offices, or they'll have collaborations with other small partners in other countries where they can work on a wider scale. Do you look at them and say, okay, you're great for this territory and we might be able to take you to these others because we see a vacancy or an opportunity? Or do you prefer to find somebody who's operating in multiple territories?
It's a tough question to answer, in that I'd love to give you a concise yes or no, but I don't think I can, because there's not one that fits all. And I think experience tells me that any of the partners we work with, our consulting services or the ICS, is still going to be heavily involved. They're still going to be involved in the governance. They're still going to be involved in the testing and the final works. I would argue that if a partner has strong industry knowledge within a given vertical that sits within the Western region, and they may not have the geographical diversity or placement or whatever the word is, our consulting services will be able to backfill them, and I'm completely comfortable with that. If you look at a modern project now, a very small amount of it is actually done on site. The vast majority of it is done on a blended nearshore model.
At what point do you then look around your partners and make acquisitions among your partners? Because there will be skills gap. There will be some of them with very good consulting expertise, perhaps better than your own teams. How challenging is that to start to acquire those people out of the market?
It has its pros and cons. We would look at any organization that's going to improve the experience for our customers. That's the number one objective we have, customer experience. Everything we've spoken about today, about getting aligned around industry, about choosing industry-specific partners, about having our cloud suites aligned to a specific industry, that's all about having more successful customers. So if there's something, or there's a partner and they are looking to join the Infor family, or they're not looking to, the key criteria for that would be, is it going to improve the experience and the success of my customers' projects? That's the number one criteria.
So you've been in the job 6 months. What are your targets for the next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 2 years? You must have some idea by now, been in for long enough. And what targets has the company given you that you must meet?
I'll start with the one that the company's given me, because that's obviously the most important. I've got a very clear mandate from my boss to double the revenue in 3 years. Very simple. Underneath that, I have five pillars that I'm using to drive that. Number one of those is customer satisfaction, customer success. It is every single thing that we do and my organization does has to be linked towards customer success. The second of those peers is ecosystem, and we've been talking about partners and ecosystem a lot. The third one is the professionalism of the organization that I have at Infor. I spoke about raising the expectations within the organization, because I believe if I do all of those correctly, we will get growth. And the growth is towards doubling the revenue over the 3 years. And the other part that's very passionate of mine, I've given myself a personal objective on, is employee engagement. We're entering in some schemes at the moment. We're going to enter into the Sunday Times Top 100 for next year as an employer of choice. And my objective is that in 12 months' time, and look back at last summer, and say, those guys there have got something really special at Infor, a culture that I aspire to go and be a part of. And that's a personal objective of mine, and something that I'm working and putting significant resources on.
Doubling in 3 years sounds like a very aggressive strategy to have to go down. You've got a lot of new technology being announced now, but you're not a company that necessarily sits on the very edge of technology. You're just coming to digital assistants and AI. How easy is it to start to take on such aggressive targets without wanting the company to move to the bleeding edge of technology?
How easy is it? It's not easy. It's a very challenging task. I was talking about earlier the size of the market opportunity, and the market opportunity is significant. we have such a strong value proposition as it stands at the moment, irrespective of the other new technologies that are coming on board. And I genuinely don't think we need to go towards the bleeding edge. What we do is complex. We solve very difficult, complex problems for customers. And we try to do it through simple software and solutions that are as simple as possible. So that is very difficult to do. And the solutions that we deliver into these complex and hard to fix problems, with the way that I've had my business case mapped out at the moment, I'm confident that we get to the revenue objectives that I've been set.
Sounds like you're going to have a fun few years, Simon. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your time as well. Cheers.